Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, June 30th, 1999. In the Creekside room this morning is our presenter, Marvin Lansberg, titled Rainforest Storytelling with Barnabas and Olivia.
Session a series this week called Come to the Storytelling Tree, and it's got a subtitle, Opening God's Word to Children. And today's is Rainforest Storytelling with Barnabas and Olivia. And so this is really a what we want to do is talk about some puppet use in storytelling in children's sermons, and then we'll do some non-puppet things tomorrow. But yeah, let's see, was everybody here yesterday that's here now?
I was.
Okay. Just very briefly, the purpose behind sort of what we're doing this week is threefold. And one is to talk about children's sermons and doing children's sermons for people who do them or might do them or who talk to people that do them or in a church that does them. So you could go back and say, hey, maybe we could try something like this. It's also broader than that. I mean, if you do any work with children in Sunday school or just with your family, part of what we're doing this week is dealing with ways to interact with kids and story. And then the third aspect is just to give us a chance to talk about ways to unlock and exercise your creativity. So those three things lie behind our purposes. And today we were going to, as I said, do some puppet things. And the sheet that I've got, I'm going to go through in a minute, just got some of the different techniques and ideas to help produce writing when you need to for the next day. And so specifically for today, the two things we're going to focus on, I have to look at my notes to make sure I get this right. One is if you've got a children's sermon or something you need to produce for tomorrow, how can you do that efficiently and in a fun fashion but without taking forever? And the second aspect of that then is why, in the way we do this, making story the primary aspect of the children's sermon event is a good idea. And as Kay said yesterday, anything that we say up here is meant to be more descriptive than prescriptive. It's descriptive of what we do and what's working for us. And tomorrow we're going to spend a big part of the session actually talking to whoever's here about what you do and what works for you, so we can sort of share ideas more than just sort of say, well, this is what we're doing. And I'm anxious to get to that because I know some of you do things, and it's always fun for me to hear what else is going on. So, today we're actually not listing sort of Marvin's advice, do this, don't do that, but tomorrow I'm going to put some list of advice up there that some people have come up with that say, give some prescriptive advice that I'd like to use to stimulate some discussion to see what you think about that type of advice. And I have a few, not very many, sort of guidelines that I do sort of think, and I'd be interested to know what other people have to say. You need to say anything before? Okay. So, to help us get in the mood, this is one of the props typically that we have up there. So, to get in the kid mood, let's sing something. And we just brought with us, I've decided to follow Jesus. So,
that's it old.
Get in the kid mood, we'll just sing this.
I have decided to follow Jesus.
No, I may wander.
the song we did yesterday and today is songs we do often with the kids, and you know, even the little two-year-olds and toddlers, they learn a lot of it, and they just, we do a lot of marching around and playing around, so.
Have fun. So what we thought we'd start with another sample, and then I'd like to go through that sheet that I got with you that really talks about, well, it does, it gives me a chance to be an Aristotelian for a minute. I teach English literature, and really what's on there is genre criticism. Not, this makes it sound really boring. But,
I'm just peeping.
Oh, sorry. But it's not that boring. It just gives us a framework for it, for talking about something. Sorry. I don't even know what we got going.
You get to meet someone new today.
This is... I got two more pieces of paper.
Can I read mine?
This is Abigail, right? This is the Abigail star. Did you ever find the peacemaking part?
No.
Oh, well.
Somewhere in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Somewhere is a story. These are all text-based, so somewhere there's a text about Abigail making peace with David. So that's what this text is about, and it'll actually get to the story. But,
the kids, when we do these during our Sunday school opening, the kids then go into their different classroom, you know, the kindergarten, the first graders, whatever, and then they are, the text and the curriculum for that day is about being peacemakers, or whatever the text is for that day, and so Marvin bases his stories on that. But then also when we do children's sermons during worship service, then the stories are based on the text in the worship service.
Sometimes they overlap. Okay, here we go. So this is just a sample to get us going, and then what we'd like to do today is talk about the three types of children's sermons in general. I mean, these are the genres. It's on the sheet, but it's story-based, object lessons, and dialogue. So you can see what type this is. You can try to decide. Okay, this is Barnes. Buenos dias, boys and girls. How is everybody today?
Hi, kids. Remember me, I'm Pepe. I flew up to visit Barnabas while Olivius is away, and I'm from Bolivia, too. And I'm visiting him this weekend. I didn't want Barnabas to be lonely, so I've been spending the night. We're best friends, just like David and Jonathan in the Bible.
We stayed up last night eating candy and telling stories about when we were kids in the jungle.
Yeah, my favorite one is about the great Pekoff. Do you kids want to hear it?
Yeah. Sometimes, like Emily yesterday at Narnia said, no!
Oh, be quiet.
Anyway, one time when we were young, my family decided to take a summer vacation and go to Peru, to the beach.
And Barnabas' parents said he could invite a friend along, so guess who got to go?
We flew a long way to get there, looking for a beach my dad had seen on an ad on Palm Tree TV.
That's PTTV for short.
Anyway, we made it most of the way there, but then we couldn't find the right beach. We were lost, and I was scared we wouldn't get there before it got dark.
You were scared, but I was even worse off. I went into a tropical depression.
But then we bumped into this big bird with beautiful blue feet. Dad thought maybe he would help us out. So he asked him for directions and for some food since we were all hungry.
But without saying a word, the big bird simply took one look at our feet, then lifted up his own big blue webbed feet and went like this to Barnabas's father. No, I don't.
You flipped me in the face.
Flippity, flippity, flippity. And told him to blow off.
I guess that's how seabirds talk.
Yeah, but he said it in Spanish.
Boy, was my dad mad. I'd never seen him so mad. He was all for flippity, flippiting old Bluefoot right back. But before he did, Bluefoot shouted, I've never liked yellow-footed birds. I want you off my beach. No, wait. I have a better idea. Before you go, I challenge you to a peck-off. Go ahead, take your best shot at me. Peck me, right here in the chest. and then I get to take my best shot back at you. We'll see who is the birdliest bird on this beach.
That's when Mrs. Bluefoot came flapping up. We all protected our faces, not wanting to get flibbertied by her too, when she said, "Stop, stop, stop this nonsense." She turned to us and said, "I'm sorry. You see, my husband is a blue-footed booby, and sometimes he acts like one. A big booby, I mean. Now, Bobby, why don't you help this family instead of being mean and acting tough and challenging them to this silly peck-off?"
And Bobby said, "Well, darling, sometimes a booby's got to do what a booby's got to do. Now stand aside, woman."
So she ran off. We thought she'd given up trying to make peace, but right before Barnabas's dad was about to give the first peck, she came back and she had something with her.
An Acme never fail beak sharpener?
Barnabas.
A peck of pickled peppers?
Barnabas, no.
No, I remember. She came back with a giant plate full of slug tacos!
Yay! Yum.
Just as my dad was leaning back to give Mr. Booby a great big heck of a peck, he stopped and sniffed. "Do I smell what I think I smell?" he said.
"Yes," said Mrs. Booby. "I've made slug tacos for everyone. Now, everybody, why don't you sit and eat? I think eating is better than arguing. And peace is better than a peck. Now, dig in, everyone, before the slugs all crawl away."
And we did. And it was great. The best plate of slug tacos we'd ever had. And by the end, we were laughing and telling stories, blue feet and yellow feet, and no one seemed to care anymore. We ended up spending the night with them, and they invited us to have our vacation on their beach. Now we go back there every summer.
All because Mrs. Booby was a peacemaker.
Hey, you know, this reminds me of today's Bible story. It's about peacemaking, too. You'll hear about it in your classes, maybe. It's about David. Remember the guy who was best friends with Jonathan and with God? Well, one day, he was out with some of his men, and they got lost, and they bumped into this guy named Nabal, whose name meant big, foolish brute. It really does. David asked for some food, but Nabal wouldn't help. Instead, he insulted David, so David was going to go get his men and fight. That's when Abigail came out. She was Nabal's wife. She was the peacemaker and apologized for her husband and gave David and his men food and made friends with them. She also knew that God wants us to work for peace.
That's why Jesus says later in the Bible, "Blessed are the peacemakers." I hope we all here can learn to be peacemakers in our families and at school and in the whole world.
Yeah, and next time somebody tries to flibbity-flibbity you, try, or if your sister or brother start bugging you, don't just peck them. Try being a peacemaker. Blessed are the peacemakers. Now, let's sing something. How about that Love Your Neighbor song that's about peacemaking? And then maybe I can find a slug taco around here someplace. I'm hungry. Adios,
go with God.
Is this a great day or what? And then
we always break right into a song.
In Sunday school, yeah.
Yeah. And Love Your Neighbor is a song about...
That's some Veggie Tales, you know, the Veggie Tale thing.
Have you ever heard of Veggie Tales? I have a pot. No, she has a pot and I have a shoe or something. I don't know. Anyway, it's about baking peace. So.
Okay, so if I could, you recognize that story from the Bible? I mean, it's not one of the big ones. So we get to do a little bit of linguistics, you know, to get the ball means big brute. So anyway, if you could just follow along on here, I'm going to point to a couple things in particular, and then just point at a few others that we'll refer to later. But the basic method that we employ for children's sermons, I like to call a parabolic method. I mean, that's a nice label for a number of reasons, but you know, it makes you think of Jesus' parables and storytelling right from the front. But the word parable literally means to throw beside, to take one thing and throw it next to another. In the Greek, which is really getting at, is making a comparison. So, you know, Jesus is telling his parables. The form for the parables is, well, the kingdom of God is like, what's it like? Well, we'll throw it next to this and see what happens. It's like the mustard tree. And then you can kind of develop the analogy and see what happens. And there's an element then of serendipity really in that. It's not something, you know, that you plan out a whole bunch in advance, but it's just kind of thrown next to it. And, you know, if that one doesn't work, then you try another one. So by a parabolic method and throwing one thing next to another, really what that means to me is that whatever the biblical text is for the Sunday, if you're doing these in church, I mean, there's the text that needs to be addressed in the children's sermon, and we really do. I mean, we're Methodists now, but I'm Lutheran enough, you know, I like to preach on the text. And we've got friends that also, I mean, do the children's sermons at our church. I mean, this one friend of ours, Jim Bittinger, I mean, Kay will say, you know, you want to do it next Sunday? And he'll say, sure. She says, you want to know what the text is? No. I don't care what it is. And he just comes in and, like, does something, which, you know, is another way to do it. But typically, we start with a text. And then, I mean, the method of putting this together is to throw something next to that text. I mean, what's it going to be? And really the whole rest of this is manifestations of what might be thrown next to the text. So in general, again, there's three types of, I'm going to be here now, of children's sermons. You know, this is, if you're Aristotle and you're doing your tree diagrams of genre criticism, you know, you've got poetry up here and you can chop it up into three types. You've got drama, you've got poetry, and you've got story, and then you can chop up drama into tragedy and comedy, and then you can chop, I mean, that's sort of what he likes to do. And that's really what this is doing. So there's three basic formats for children's sermons: the storytelling format, the object lesson, and dialogue. And the dialogue would be where the kids come up and you talk with them, and they say things, and you say things, and an object lesson, and we all know what that means. You've got something, you know, some object, and you're drawing a lesson from what you can do by manipulating the things that are in front of you and make some connection to the text. And stories, we all know, they don't need any explanation. So that one we just did right now, of those three types.
1 Samuel 25.
Oh, you found it. It is there.
I don't just look populous.
No.
Literary.
Yeah. Well, I guess.
But you know, that's the thing you're throwing next to.
But there's food. Abigail comes out and serves food. That's part of the, I think, the communion going on there. Okay, so that one we just did. I mean, if you had to categorize that, would that be storytelling, object lesson, or dialogue? Would you say?
That's a storytelling.
Okay, I mean that's, yeah. So you know, the heart of that one, we all got the story about this blue-footed booby and this encounter that obviously is meant to sort of have parallels with the Bible story, and then it reminds them of the Bible story, and then the Bible story gets told. So they get it sort of one way and then another way, but that really would be one manifestation of a storytelling type.
I've never seen, when you say storytelling, except I've talked to you before, so I know what you're doing, but when you hear storytelling in children's sermon, it usually would mean telling the story of the Good Samaritan.
Yes.
Or telling, I mean, you not tell a story of Abigail feeding Naboth, it wouldn't be a big enough story. So yours is different. You tell a story that has ridiculous things in it, and then you tuck in a Bible story.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of unusual?
I think if you're using a storytelling format and the text is just this great story anyway, I mean, I wouldn't even fool around with it. I would just tell it in some fashion. But sometimes they're kind of thin, or there's just, it doesn't seem, I mean, sometimes it's like, I mean,
it's
just
not real child friendly.
There's nothing there.
Nothing there.
And then, I mean, in those cases, that's when I go for, well, let's think up some parallel story here. And then, that, I mean, because you can't take, I mean, I feel funny taking artistic license with the actual text or too much. I mean, sometimes you can modernize them. I mean, you can do all kinds of things there too, but, you know, I don't want to tell kids a Bible story and put slug tacos in it and have them going away thinking there's slugs in the Bible. So we, you know, we can do it this fashion.
Which is, that just reminds me of the Bible story we're going to learn today, you know. So he just connects it that way.
And then typically what will happen, I mean, like if this is in Sunday school, like all Sunday school teachers there are there also, and then, you know, they'll go up and have their lesson plan. But then the story that they hadn't heard yet, that just got invented, you know, the kids will still be sort of thinking about, and it'll get brought back up, you know, and they'll get worked into their curriculum lesson sort of on an ad hoc basis. Or even if it's the children's sermon, then it gets, I mean, sometimes it gets mentioned later in the service someplace.
But often the Bible story or the text is so far above their concept that it's just verbiage.
Right.
I mean, the language doesn't relate to anything they know, so maybe they retain some of it, but it's so heavy for them that I don't think it even penetrates.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe if you tell it to them every week until they're 15, they'll see some relationship
right.
to things that they know.
But there's also a matter of just the words themselves. I mean, I've been teaching the 2 years before kindergarten, and we used the Augsburg sheets. There's a picture and then the story in the back. But the story is, like King James, I mean, it's not that bad, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
And so we finally stopped reading it because it was absolutely meaningless.
Right.
And so we would take the picture and then tell a story just on the spot. We wouldn't really plan it. But a few times we've had children's sermons leading up to that, and it was so much easier to then tell the story, tell the Bible story in our own words, but then tie it back into a couple of words came from the children's sermon.
Yeah.
And then it was the most satisfying of all when you then bring the kids to the parents and they would then say the word, you know, because this would be 10 minutes later or 15 minutes later after playing.
Yeah.
And so then they got something, and then when the word comes up in a different context, every now and then one of the kids would say, hey, that's like Jonathan.
Yeah.
And so that was our ultimate goal, was just to get a couple
of words. They had a picture,
to visualize.
Visualize something in their head to recall.
And that's what the puppets are doing. I mean, they're helping them see something. I mean, and drama becomes a part of it. And I mean, drama sort of worked into this in a lot of ways. I mean, dramatizing a story has more impact than reading a bunch of words to somebody. And that's on my list of don'ts for children's sermons that I get to tomorrow. But you know, and I've seen people do this and it works, but someone who brings a book and just reads a story up there in front to the kids, I mean, that would be low on my list of what to do for a children's sermon, even if it's a kid's story. But just to be reading to the kids, partly because of, you know, what we're trying to do is do this inclusive thing with the kids and the adults and bring everybody into it. And if you're just reading to a few in front of you, I mean, and the adults can still, you feel sort of excluded and you stop listening. I do. If someone's reading a story to someone up there and it's not being read to me.
Well, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't quite go that far because we read to our children at night and, you know, reading out of a book is great. I think it's limited, though, in for teaching reasons. You know, for trying to help the kids learn about the love of Jesus. You know, it gets to be limiting, you're just reading. So I would just say that
we don't even agree on a number of things.
You read your script? I mean, you guys are reading your script. Do you memorize it?
No.
Or do you read it?
And you can see, I mean, and that's the one disadvantage of doing scripted puppet shows is, I mean, it ties you to a script and you have to be looking at that some. And you know,
are you up front like you are here, or are you behind some kind of screen?
No, this is it. So we
have kids, and the kids actually, we sit on the ground, and the kids are around.
It's the chancel area. We do it in our sanctuary. I mean, so it's the same place when we're doing it in Sunday school as for the children's sermon. So it's the exact same. We're in church, and we're up in the chancel area, and there's some steps, and the kids are all gathered right at our feet, and we're not sitting in chairs up like this. We're just sitting on the ground with them. And then all the pews are there, and like the adults, come in to listen, because, you know, we encourage this as an intergenerational thing. So a lot of, you know, the parents would come around because they're around. But then, I mean, a lot of grandma, grandpa types come in there just because, you know, they know it's going to be something that's
sort of
gonna
funny,
and there's going to be some joke that they're going to get that's going to make them feel like, ah, I get this. And that's why, I don't know, I mean, down here, one of my mottos, it's under Marvin's Bag of Tricks A. I don't know if this got read yesterday in the announcements, but one bad pun is worth a year of seminary Greek. At least in a children's sermon, I think that's true. I'm not sure it's true for a pastor. but you know, I mean, bad puns, you know, everybody gets to sort of say, oh, that one's terrible. And I mean, I still have, I mean, you know, some people like puns better than others, but you know, when you get one in, I mean, I've got this people that come in. I mean, the whole aspect of when I do a children's sermon and you have afterwards all these adults come up. I mean, this one just recently, I forgot his name, but he's 85 or 90, he's very old, and I did something, and then he came up to me, you know, we're just packing up stuff after church, you know, and he looked at me and he said, "You're still a kid," with this big grin on his face, you know, it was like conspiratorially, like, I mean, he is too, and, you know, he just is just this wonderful thing, and that's...
He loves the children's time all the time, you know. I mean, it is like a little bit of a conspirator, you know. It's like secretly he also is connecting, and he loves
that.
Yeah.
And that's what I think stories really do anyway. And I mean, why I think, in spite of what we know about developmental theory, the kids don't understand the ways that adults do. You can use story to get everybody involved. You don't have to just target the littlest ones and then have everyone else be kind of bored while you're targeting them. You can do things to get everybody going.
The key is what your wife said, is to connect.
Yeah.
However you do it, with humor, whatever.
Yeah, and there's lots of ways.
The old folk, the 85-year-old,
yeah.
Right. Connecting with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And everybody's different in that respect is going to have something that you do that does connection. Let me just point to a couple of things on here, because some of the that we're talking about, I can even make reference to the way this is chopped up. So now I'm just on C, again, more Aristotelian tree diagrams. So we chop ours up. I mean, I do non-puppet children's sermons as one type, and puppet just as a way of making a distinction. But the things that I'm doing in each are very similar. But, you know, some people would just never feel comfortable about doing puppet stuff and would think about sort of other things to do. So how I do it under this next section, I've got just a couple things about how I do non-puppet ones and puppet ones. And I want to, even though we're not talking about non-puppet ones today, I just want to go through that to get to the puppet ones. But you can see, again, here's the storytelling, the object lesson, the dialogue type for a non-puppet children's sermon. If for a storytelling non-puppet sermon, as we were just talking about, my chief version is this parabolic method. So to have the Bible text, and the thing I throw it next to is a when I was a kid story. I mean, kids love to hear those. So if you've got the Abigail story, and I'm not up there with puppets, to tell some story about myself, when I was a kid, and have some true story about peacemaking.
I fought with my brother about, yeah. You know, I mean, I was telling Karen Schramm yesterday that you don't have to be totally kind of goofy like Marvin, you know, in some of his, you just think of your own, oh, you remember the big fight over the blue dress and it got ripped because you were, you know, whatever, and you bring something. And then you talk about peacemaking and how that worked, you know. So
I mean, one we did, I did as a children's sermon, you know, I mean, my mom's here. I mean, I just, the story wasn't this text, it was something like this. And I just told the story. Oh, when I was a kid, I'll tell you a little thing, we'd always tromp down the stairs in the morning and call who would get to sit by the big heat. Because it all came out one side, and the little heat, you know, it didn't come out very much on the other side. We had three kids, and then whoever didn't get yelled in soon enough would have to sit and get no heat. You know, so we'd get big heat, little heat, and we'd come tromping down the stairs. You know, so I told these kids this kind of story about when I was a kid, you know, and you know, they can all identify because they fight with their siblings, and then told the Bible story, like peacemaking, and talked about, you know, what might we have done differently when we were running down the stairs, and I always got the big heat because I was the big brother. And anyway, I mean, just again, so a story. My chief method for storytelling sermons is to tell some story about when I was a kid, and then tie it into the Bible story and tell it, and then the adults have fun making the connections. The kids like both the stories, and then it goes in a lot of directions.
I was going to say it's not like the children then become angels after they hear this. Oh, yes. But I think that as you do peacemaking like the one we just did, or peacemaking like Marvin just described, that theme shows up in different Bible texts periodically, you know, and it just that repetition over time sinks in eventually. They will try it out. They will, I mean, I just yesterday, Allison finally, she said something gently to Hannah. I mean, we have two daughters, they fight all the time. And I just thought, I hope it's not just once a month that she can do that. Let's try to do it once a week. And, you know, I think it's over time, exposure eventually, I think, leads to, hopefully, peacemakers.
And then, you know, it just increases their story database. So, then, you know, you'll hear the kids talking about some of the silly stories they make up, but then, you know, they'll talk about the big heat, little heat, and then they'll incorporate it into their play, and, you know, and then they're getting something out. Back to the storytelling, I'm on under that storytelling. I mean, the other chief version for storytelling form I use, if I don't do a when I was a kid story, then a word focus, and this is like what Eric was just saying, to pick some word that jumps out in that text that you want to be the one to hit. And this isn't that surprising, but hitting it then in some fashion through whatever method you're using, whether you tell some kind of a story that has that word in it, or whether you're just telling the Bible story, giving particular attention to that word. And we've got a sample of that one we're going to do today, where a word just jumps out at you.
Is that today?
I think. And so then, I mean, they at least are zeroing in on some aspect. Okay, and then object lessons, just for non-storytelling, I do use them because I mean it's kind of fun to think of object lessons, and lots of books are full of them. But when I use them, I tend to incorporate. I don't just do it; I put it inside a story. So I'm not just saying this is like Kingdom of God. I mean, I put it inside some kind of a story so that the little ones who can't understand that, I mean, they can't make that metaphorical jump exactly, you know. And I hear the developmental people in our church even saying this. I mean, and I know what they mean, but if you do that right, I mean, you can still get over that hump, even if they're not getting the same anyway. But I do incorporate it into a story, and I got an example of that. I'll just show you how that works. And then dialogue, we often have dialogue built into no matter what format we're doing, so that there isn't just a performance aspect. You know, the puppets are asking kids things, or I'm asking them things, so that becomes, you know, they come up and expect to be able to respond in a certain way. I typically don't just do a come on up, let's talk as the overall format. Again, I have some kind of a story with questions as part of it. Okay, so now, to jump to the B with the puppet children's sermons, this will all now look exactly the same, because whether you do it with puppets or not, it really is quite similar. So storytelling with puppets, the basic format for that is when I was a kid story. I mean, that's what we just did. When I was a kid story turns into Barnabas saying, back when I lived in the rainforest. And that's really all that then is. All my ideas for that, I mean, really probably start with, you know, my own experience as a kid, and then I turn it into something there, or, you know, who knows where blue-footed booby comes from, but, I mean, really, that came from the etymology of Nabal. I mean, I was reading my notes in the Bible, I said, Nabal means a big brute. You know, so, you know, brute, this guy's a
and
boob.
These are all birds, you know, so because he tells juggle stories with birds, then, of course, this bird.
So it becomes this. Anyway, so that Barnabas telling jungle stories really is a when I was a kid format. And, I mean, those probably are the hardest. I mean, I think writing puppet scripts is harder, takes a little longer than a non-puppet children's sermon. I mean, I can put together a non-puppet children's sermon, you know, in 10 minutes, practice it, and it's fat. To write a script takes me probably an hour.
Which is more effective?
After they get to know the characters, I would say the puppet.
You know, since it's consistent characters, what it allows then is not just an individual children's sermon, but you've got this long history in the story. These kids know, so you can review. You can say, remember this, and it's easier to tie things together. Well, I think the other ones are as successful, and I wouldn't say puppets are better.
Yeah.
But puppets automatically, when you got a puppet on there, no matter what you're doing, it is a story. And it is have a dramatic element to it. So you can do your object lesson if the puppet's doing it and do the exact same thing if I were doing it, and it has a different effect, which is, I think, interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, when those kids, you get these puppets out, I mean, the kids, it is amazing, the magic of having something talk. And that's why I think when I'm reading my script, and the puppets are talking, it's not a disaster because I'm looking over here, because the kids aren't looking at me anyway.
Most of the time they really don't. I watch them, they're all looking
they're
at
watching.
Oh, really? I would have thought we lost eye contact.
Yeah, nope, because they're not looking at Marvin.
That's interesting.
It is true because I watch the kids. Most of the time I'm not in these puppet shows. See, I'm only doing this.
So they're on the puppet, not your eyes.
And they're watching
and
the
puppet. And I still try, you know, because we're just sitting with them. I'm still trying to keep eye contact, but, you know, I have to go back and forth. And
They definitely are looking at Barnabas.
The person who does Olivia. I write these at like 10 at night or whenever it is, and then I email them to her that night, you know, so she looks at it if it's fairly soon. If it's midnight, she's not looking at them until the next morning. You know, she peels them off. So there's not, we don't rehearse ever. She just has it, looks through it, and then says, you know, what's this? And give her a few explanations or something really bizarre. And then we just sit down and wing it.
So it's spontaneous.
Yeah, and you know, so the actual dramatization is just you make up as you go. And then we make mistakes, we get lost, we get confused, and the kids actually think that's pretty funny too, you know.
That's good humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like it.
It's like, oops.
Yeah, you know, you just say something, you know, now what was I supposed to do? And they
more goofed up.
Yeah, they think that's
great.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm out, the object, word focus. Object lesson with puppets. Oh no, I'm on B1AB. the other formats then for puppets, if jungle stories is one, and this is just a label, clowning around would be another. I mean, it just taps into, you know, clown services and clowns. I mean, just being funny and doing ridiculous things is the thing you throw next to the Bible text. So there might not be a story, it's just banter back and forth, puns, jokes. Sometimes, I get some of these ideas from Calvin and Hobbes. You know, I still lament that Watterson isn't still doing Calvin and Hobbes. I mean, it was a great resource for life. But, you know, it'll bring in some inventions. So Barnabas will bring in a reverse-a-tron that he's made that allows him to go through the mirror into backwards land, and just whatever. But clowning around with each other's work. Or sometimes, as my mom was just saying, we just tell the Bible story, and there isn't anything you're setting next to it. Sometimes a story's so good, why do anything with it? And there was a run of parables for a while. I mean, all we do with the parable, I mean, you don't need to retell a parable. You can. We had the squid for a while, and we're doing squid versions of the parables. I mean, it allows some funny stuff. But when you're just retelling it, sometimes you have the kids acting it out. Sometimes the puppets and the kids are acting things. I mean, we'll show you some examples of this, so it'll be more than just a list here. But that's the basic format. And what I think, we'll show you an object lesson with puppets. and see what you think. And I mean, this same object lesson I did the first time without puppets, a long time ago before I really was doing that many children's sermons. And I got done. I mean, it was weird. The congregation broke into applause and applauded this children's sermon just because they were sort of just with it. And it's never happened even since. So I don't even know what that meant. So I did it without puppets first, but we're going to do it with puppets right now. And you got it. And we need somebody who would like to be in this. This is, you know, it's like Sunday morning. We draft people in. It's another way to sort of include people. And they have to rehearse. So anybody want to be Mr. Owl? This is a great character, let me tell you. Who wants to be Mr. Owl? Oh, right.
Come on up here.
This is Mr. Owl. He's a worm, see?
Here. Coming out of it.
And, I mean, the kids now know this character, and they know the history of Mr. Owl. I mean, you don't. It doesn't even matter. But, I mean, we got on this kick of going into backwards land with this machine. And in backwards land, everything is spelled backwards. So Barnabas becomes Sabinrab, and Olivia is Avelio, you know. And they met this worm over there, and worm spelled backwards is?
M-R-O-W.
Get it? So, you know, I mean, the kids, you know, they're not exactly following that, but Mr. Owl's fun. They just like that.
Well, they did too, because you stopped in the middle and explained it. Right. Get it, kids? You know, worm spelled that, you know. And we took a little time to W O R M and then M R O W. We stopped and we kind of just, you know, sure, 2 and 3 year olds aren't going to get it, but the 5 year olds got it.
Now, so, you know, can you grab the ball? Anyway, so Mr. Owl has this history. I mean, everything was backwards there, so worms ate birds, you know, you get this. You know. Anyway, so
objects.
They left a Bible back there. You don't want the whole history of Barnabas world, but they accidentally left a Bible back there, and then they read it and got converted, so everything got sort of fixed. So now he's their friend, and he's around. Mr. Owl's a character we like to use. So this one.
I'm usually Mr. Owl.
Yeah. This one, the text is the golden rule. Love your neighbor was the basic text. So now I did actually. I've got another script. If you don't want to leave.
This is good enough.
Can you see?
If it's any closer, I might not be able to see it.
Yeah. And Mr. Owl, you know, I should even. Mr. Owl's here. Mr. Owl, like, does he only have one?
No. He's
2, 3, couple at the end. Oh, one.
Okay. So we'll see if we can do this. And usually I practice. Before, especially if I'm using objects, you know, because I like to be smooth and I haven't practiced this, so I don't know what's going to happen. Okay, buenos dias, muchachos y muchachas. How is everybody today?
Hi, kids. Hi. Happy Valentine's Day. Did you all get some Valentines at school?
Yes.
They usually then talk about, you know, yeah. I got one, you know, whatever.
So there's some of the dialogues that we're talking about. Kids. Hey, guess what? I was asked to give the children's sermon at the church across the street. We're in a Methodist church. There's a Lutheran church across the street. Next Sunday, and I have this great idea, but I wanted to practice it on you guys first. Is that okay?
Sure, Barnabas. What's the Bible story?
Well, it's the part of the Bible where Jesus talks about loving our enemies.
Love your enemies? Quid can't stand an enemy. He says a lot of them have stingers.
Quid is this squid. His name's Quid Pro Quo, or Squid Pro Quo, I guess. So he'd been in late. Not anemones, enemies. Here, Olivia, you read the Bible story, and then I'll do my children's sermon for you kids. You're gonna love this. It's so cool.
Hey, wait for me. You guys are always starting without me. And today of all days, just because I'm late, you always make me the bad guy in the stories. Remember last week? You had me be the robber in the story of the Good Samaritan.
Yeah, and you hit me harder than you needed to get your point across.
Sorry, but then that armadillo guy that we didn't even know, he got to be Jesus. Sometimes I want to be Jesus.
Excuse me, you are interrupting.
Oh, it's all right, Barnabas. Maybe you can use Mr. Owl in your children's sermon. Is Jesus in your story? Can Mr. Owl get to be the one like Jesus, do you think?
Well, why not? I'll tell you what to do when it's time. Now, where were we? Oh, yes. You were about to read from the Bible, just like they do in church, Olivia.
Oh, we have a little Bible.
Yeah, we have one.
A little book that she reads. Okay. So I'm reading the Bible. You have learned how it was said, you must love your neighbor and hate your enemy.
No, no, Olivia. Don't be so lively and interesting when you read. Then, what would they need me for? Just read it in an Uno tone.
You have learned how it was said, you must love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say this to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. In this way, you will be the children of your Father in heaven, for he causes his sun to rise on bad men as well as good, and his rain to fall on honest and dishonest people alike.
No, we're trying to make fun of the way people actually read it from the church, so that was part of the joke. Now, kids, you all say, huh? And that's where I come in. There's a scripture being read. They don't get it. You know, what's that? Okay.
Do I get to be Jesus now?
Just wait. But I need an introduction. That's you.
And here he is, folks. Someone to clarify the cloudy. Someone to simplify the significant. Someone to scrute the inscrutable.
That's good enough.
Oh, here he is, kids. It's Beatitudinous Barnabas.
Hi, kids. Buenos dias. Thanks for inviting me to do the children's sermon today. I'm usually across the street at the Methodist church, but today I get to be Lutheran. My topic this morning is gospel physics. Can you all say that?
Gospel physics.
Yeah. Now, can you all see? I want you to pretend that these balls down here...
You should be down there.
I should be, but I'm not going to.
Okay,
I have to get on the ground. You get to get on the ground. I have to. My God. Okay, so can you still see? Okay, see? I got lost. Can everybody see? I want you to pretend that each of these balls down here are kids. So I've got all these different kids. And see, they're all different. So let's say that they're in this big group at school, kind of like you're in a big group here today. And let's say a mean kid comes up and wants to be mean here. And these kids are all here playing. Actually, Barnabas doing this. And he comes up and wants to be mean to everybody else. Now, if this mean kid here hits this kid there, what's going to happen? If this kid hits this kid,
what's going to happen?
He'll hit
the kid next to him.
He'll hit the kid next to him, yeah? Mm-hmm.
And everybody's fighting.
And then everybody gets hit. So, let's see. I'm a little bit lost here. Let's try it. Okay. This kid's going to go.
Oops.
Okay, so that ball rolls out. This kid gets hurt and runs away. I guess it's this point. Now, what do you think this kid should do?
Hit back.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, let's say instead of being nice, that kid decides to hit back. But the mean kid is too big, so the little one decides to hit someone smaller. So it keeps on going, and they keep hitting each other, and they pass on the violence. That's the point of this. Okay, and pretty soon there'd be a free-for-all on the playground. Now, let's say all these kids have been reading their Bible and going to church and stuff, and they have Jesus in their hearts. And right in the middle of them, wherever they go. Now, what will happen, do you think, when the mean kid comes up and hits someone if they have Jesus in their heart?
What will happen?
What might happen?
Run away,
okay. Not hit back.
Not hit back.
So I would say, turn the other cheek, love them instead, or something like this. Okay, right, well, they won't pass it down the line. They'll stop that meanness right there, and maybe by trying to love back. And Let's see if we can show how that works with this. Now, Mr. Owl, it's your turn. You get to be Jesus.
Yay, finally. It's about time. Now, what do you want me to do? No, hey, wait a minute. You don't expect me to get down there with those smashing balls, do you?
Come on, Mr. Owl. It's just what you wanted.
Okay.
So you get right in the middle there.
Now you have to put, I think you have to take them off your finger. I can't remember.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, because I need the pad in there.
Want me to take it off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the whole point. So there's Jesus. Jesus is in there. And if we hit...
Hey! Ow! 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 Ow!
See? It worked. They didn't hit each other. They didn't pass the hit down the line. That's gospel physics. So if someone comes and hits you sometime, what will you do since you have Jesus in your heart? Try not to hit back. That's right. Now, is this a great day or what? You have one more.
No, we have one more. Say, does anybody want some applesauce?
Okay.
I forgot that one. Good job.
Sorry, it's a little rough, you see. But
great.
You can see, I mean, there's an object lesson. I mean, it's a straight object lesson with balls, but, you know, it's incorporated within some characters in a story. I mean that one would work if you just did it, you know, as yourself and said, hey, let's think about this. And, I mean, and I think it would work equally well for adults and for the older kids, the little ones. You know, aren't going to quite understand what the connection is. I'm not sure putting it in a story makes them understand it any better, but it gives other elements to the children's sermon than that they're involved with. And that's
well, Hannah, who's seven, knows the, still has said gospel physics. So she sort of has heard this idea of gospel physics and that Jesus is the soft one. I mean, you know, I don't know how much deeper it gets than that, but she gets the idea that Jesus is the soft Padawan and therefore stops the fighting, you know, when Jesus is there. So,
do you ever have adults come to the children's opening part and then go home feeling that they've been to church and they don't have to go to the adult part?
Right. We have people come who don't have children at home anymore. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, and Valerie, who's 40 years old, and I mean, she just likes these. You know, it's nice to have people that sort of like what you're doing. I mean, she just, is, you know, I mean, and I write some of these with her in mind because I know, oh, Valerie's gonna like this one, you know, because I know she's gonna hear her laughing back there someplace, and then, you know, I mean, and she says, I mean, she's got three kids, and then they go home and they talk, you know, their kids talk about, and she teaches Sunday school, so she does this anyway, but, I mean, to sort of incorporate stories into a way that, I mean, it's what you want a good sermon to do, is for people to keep talking about it during the week and make a difference, and, I mean, that's what sometimes this will do, it'll have them still talking about it, and I mean, I think that's great. Some of the mechanics of this, again, we'll talk to tomorrow, but the other type of format is where we get the kids more involved in sort of an organized fashion. We just had one sample of that, and I guess let's just do that quickly.
The open one?
This is one. I mean, one of the techniques that in my bag of tricks down there that I like, it's getting the kids to shout things. And on cue, you know, I'm just yelling, but on cue, they're waiting for something. You give them something to listen for, and when they hear that, then they all get to jump up and shout real loud, you know, and then they get to move around and be involved in that way. And it's not, I mean, this isn't quite the same as getting in a dialogue with them, but they're at least participating. And that's what this one is. And this one also then is one of the types, it's a puppet, but it's a word focus. So we picked a word of the text to clue in on, and you'll see, we're not fooling around with this one much. We're just telling the Bible story.
Well, and Eric was talking about that when you were talking about us, you know, looking at the picture and then finding a key word or two, and then rather than the long text that doesn't hit home with a 3 or 4 year old, that's what Marvin has done on this one. He's chosen a key word, and
this is the Road to Emmaus story. which is told in it anyway, so can't remember the details you're hearing in a second. Okay.
So this one would have been read, the text would have been read, right? Is this a children's story?
Yeah, this was on Easter Sunday. It was the text on Easter Sunday, I guess.
Holding it so you're not looking over the side.
Okay. Buenos dias, muchachos, muchachas. How is everyone today?
Hi, kids. Hi. Most of you here know us already. You see, because it's Easter, there would be a lot of extras there. So most of you here know us already, but for those of you who don't, this is Barnabas Beak, and I'm Olivia from Bolivia. As you know, we usually help out at Sunday school, but today is an important and exciting day, and we want to talk to you here in the church service.
Could some of you wake up and find your Easter nests with candy and stuff hidden in your houses already this morning?
Yes.
We found ours. Mine was hidden in the bathtub.
Hey, kids, I'll bet when you went looking for your baskets, you closed your eyes and wandered around the house feeling for them, didn't you?
No.
Well, I'll bet when you found your Easter baskets, you left them right where you found them, and you didn't open anything in them, did you?
No.
Well, I'll bet you didn't open any of those big chocolate bunny things, did you? I'll bet you left them in their boxes.
No.
Well, why? Why did you open them?
What are you talking about, Barnabas? Of course they would open their things. You and I did. In fact, you were munching your candy so fast this morning, I saw you swallowing whole jelly beans. I'll bet your crop is full of them.
Kind of like a Pez dispenser, huh? Say, this isn't going to turn into an announcement about the crop walk, is it? Anyway, I was just about to make a theological point about candy. I think the reason we like to open things so much, like presents and Easter candy, is because Jesus liked to.
Wait, Jesus liked to open chocolate bunnies?
No, but in the Bible story for today, he opened a bunch of things. And I need your help, kids, in telling a story. As I'm telling it, every time you hear me say the word open, I want you to shout out as loud as you can for me, "He's alive." Can you do that? Let's practice it once. Ready? Closed. Ha ha, fooled you. Let's try. Ready? Open.
He's alive.
Okay, perfect. Here we go. This is an Easter story. One day, just after Jesus was killed on the cross, two of the followers of Jesus were walking along a road feeling terrible. They were sad and scared and didn't know what to do. Suddenly, Jesus appeared and walked with them, but they didn't recognize him. Their eyes weren't open.
He's alive!
Yeah, but they didn't know it yet. Jesus asked them and asked them why they were so sad. And they said, "What? Are you the only ones in town, or the only one in town who doesn't know what's been happening around here? We're sad because Jesus, the Son of God, was killed on a cross 3 days ago, and we don't know what to do. What's more, Jesus' body was put into a tomb with a big rock for the door, and when some women went to the tomb to pray, the stone had been rolled away. The tomb was open.
He's alive!"
That's just what the angel said. The men went on walking down the road. Their eyes still weren't open.
He's alive!
They still didn't recognize Jesus. But Jesus walked along with them, and he opened...
He's alive!
He opened the scriptures for them, and he told them what the Bible said about himself and about Jesus, that Jesus would rise on the third day. The disciples didn't understand, but they invited the stranger to stay with them since it was getting late. He sat down to eat with them, and when Jesus took down a loaf, the minute he opened it,
he's alive!
And broke it and blessed it, the disciples' eyes were opened.
He's alive!
They recognized Jesus. He immediately vanished, but suddenly they knew that Jesus was alive and that he wanted their hearts to be open.
He's alive!
That's you.
Oh. That's why Jesus likes to open things.
He opens the eyes.
You can stop.
Okay. He opens tombs, he opens the Bible, and he opens our hearts so that we can love each other and be alive ourselves.
That's so exciting. We shouldn't just shout about it. We should sing. Let's all stand up and dance and sing the words you've been shouting. He's alive. And then we sing the He's Alive.
Adios. Go with God.
We'll see you next Sunday school. We'll see you at Sunday school next week and at Vacation Bible School this summer. So this must have been near the end of the year. So you can see the shouting thing and kids, especially when we do that in Bible school and there's like 100 kids there. I mean, it's like pandemonium. I mean, they're all shouting and it's like jet engines.
And then we start. Funny. See, we often do a song afterwards. So then we sing a song that's connected. And so He's Alive is a song that all the kids know. So we won't make you sing it.
But that shout technique, you focus on a word, and that word isn't one I was just throwing in. I mean, the text has the word open in it everywhere. So and I just grab one that's already there. People that are in the pews or with their Bibles reading the scripture when it's going to be read in a minute from the pulpit, then, or thinking about this children's sermon, in the open along the way. Mm-hmm. That's it for today. Tomorrow we're going to look down that list of advice and hear what you do in your churches and what goes on there. And then on Saturday, if you're still around, we're going to do this as a text study. So for there's a real text study in the morning, like at 9, when you come and talk about what's going to be preached on. And then right immediately following that, we're going to have our text study, which will be looking at the same text and thinking about if we're going to do a children's sermon on that text. We'll get in pairs or groups and just sort of put some together and then try them out on each other for fun. So thanks for coming.